It's a Cartoon Revolution. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Sonia.
Why Cartoon Revolution?
Because the cartoons we love aren't just for kids anymore.
Cartoons have something to say and change to inspire, and we're here to break it down for you.
Whether it's anime or Pixar, 2D or CG.
Join us as we take cartoons too seriously and discover their hidden meanings and revolutionary ideas.
Yo, yo, yo! Hello!
Hey, what's up?
Deidre, did you know Valentine's Day is coming up? How do you feel about that?
I'm
putting you on the spot right there.
I know. I guess I am dating someone, but I
wait. What?
Never really...
You never told me that. Wait, it's like happening live, folks. It's... Oh my god!
Oh
I didn't
my goodness!
Know. Wait, damn what? It. Okay, we need to discuss
later off of the podcast. Okay.
I mean, whatever you want to share now, go ahead. But I'm excited.
It's very new.
More.
It's very new.
Yay! Congrats! Oh my gosh! I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. You can whatever yourself for now, but later I want deets.
Okay, all right. Valentine's Day is not really something that's on my calendar, but I always know it's coming because of all the advertisements
the
and shopping
marketing.
And all of the marketing. Yeah, exactly.
Got his throat.
Yeah, but you have a special someone, don't you, Sonia? Do you guys celebrate Valentine's Day?
Yeah, casually, not super big deal, but yeah, I have a partner of over 5 years now, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's not really new or surprising, which is why I'm very excited about you.
But I did learn about Galentine's Day, which I learned from
I do
Parks
like
and
that
Rec.
Better. Honestly, I care more about that than Valentine's Day. I think it's so important to have holidays that celebrate female friendship, and that should be more intentionally celebrated. But anyways.
I love that.
So I guess kind of why I'm asking is, I'm guessing it's a no, but do you like romantic TV shows or movies?
No.
Is there any that you like? Even one? She's like
I'll share a really quick story.
Sure, go for it.
Just kind of to illustrate where my interests are is a one of the first dates I went on in high school with a guy. We were gonna go to a movie theater, and he asked, he's like, oh, there's two movies showing. One of them is like a romantic comedy, and the other one is about, like, it's called Contagion. And
oh wow, like, so romantic.
So romantic. And he was like, oh, do you know which one you want to watch? And I automatically was like, Contagion, definitely. And
dang, she's not like other girls.
Oh no.
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, it didn't, seeing Gwyneth Paltrow die on screen from a really terrible disease, I wasn't bothered, but later I talked to the guy and he was like, it wasn't the most romantic thing and you didn't really want to kiss to that. But I didn't realize at the time. I did care.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Classic Deidre.
Yeah.
So if you don't like romantic TV shows and movies, why did you suggest this month's cartoon?
I think because I really like Auron High School Host Club, which is what we're gonna be covering.
Oh my God.
I know. And I was a late comer to this. Same. Partly because I don't really love romantic comedies, but I also didn't really consider this a romantic comedy until I was like doing more research about it, and I was like, oh, this is the label, this is the category.
Honestly, I feel the same way. It's like not actually that romance focused, which is one of the reasons why I love it. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about that, but yeah, on the surface it definitely does seem like it would be, but it has like sort of layers and depth to it, and definitely a lot of unexpected comedy that definitely make it very different from any normal romantic show or romantic comedy show.
Right, exactly. And so for those of you who don't know, oh gosh, I keep having trouble saying this, Auron, how do you say it?
Auron? I say Auron.
Auron, or Auron, okay, you know what? Bear with me. Ouran High School's Club is this anime series that ran for like only one season at 26 episodes. Is based by a manga by the same name. And even though it aired in what, like 2003 or something,
I think it's 2006, I thought. But the
2006?
manga started coming out earlier.
Then even though that's when it came out, it has remained one of those like hallmark shows within the shoujo universe that people really
Yeah,
love.
honestly, I think it's like it's an icon of the genre. Like, I think it's up there for me with Sailor Moon. I just in terms of what I've heard of the show, it's always mentioned.
It's very pivotal. I wouldn't be surprised if, what's her name from Steven Universe?
Rebecca Sugar.
Rebecca Sugar added some of those references to Steven Universe that I just missed, but that's like kind of the level of how this show has influenced a lot of people. Yeah, and I also will defend the dub. As someone who generally has
Hot
to
take.
watch, I know it this is controversial in terms of just like dub versus sub, which I get and I've mentioned before, is I generally, if I'm by myself, it's the most pleasurable experience if I can listen to the dub and also read the sub at the same time. But the added thing is that it helps me also see the translation differences. And I will say that in this dub, I liked the performances. There's some translation things I will talk about later that, are very much of the time, but
That's what I was wondering. Like, there's a lot of this show that is very Japanese in terms of like content, like a host club, but just a lot of tropes. But I think it's really interesting that they have been able to translate it successfully, whether through sub or dub. And it's also just super popular with an American audience, which is really interesting because it seems very targeted towards Japanese audiences. And I think that's a really interesting shift that the genre took because of the show as well.
Like a lot of people introduced in the US would have watched the dub just because of the release, the way that it was released through Funimation. Or some people would have watched it on YouTube with the sub, which I have also friends who
Classic.
did that. So
Those days.
yeah.
Beautiful days.
So why don't you tell us about what the show is about? Just give us a very quick summary, Sonia.
Sure. So as you mentioned, came out in 2006. It's only one season, so 26 episodes. The fan community has begged and cried, hoping for more content for years, but alas, it remains just the one season. It's about a new student, Haruhi Fujioka, who moves to a very fancy elite private school. So very like Boys Over Flower-esque, if you've heard of that show, there's various adaptations, but classic, lower class girl goes to a schmancy private school. But anyways, Haruhi is looking for a place to study and ends up knocking over a very expensive vase and has to join the school's host club in order to pay back the debt. And the show has a very charming host of wonderful characters that fill sort of very specific romance anime tropes. So for example, the kind of main lead is Tamaki Suo, who's president of the club, and he's like the charming prince who everyone's love with, super handsome, but he's also not very like focused or aware at times. There's Kyoya Otori, the vice president, who's like a super smart, sort of intelligent, sort of cool character. We have the twins Hikaru and Kaoru Hitachin. So they're sort of like jester characters, very pranky, love to like cause chaos, a little deceptive, trickster nature, but of course that, shields a deeper loneliness and confusion that the two sort of share. Lastly, we have the two characters, Hani Nozuka, who's like what's called the Lolita boy type. He's basically like the cute little boy sort of looking trope. And then we have Takashi Mori Nozuka, who's like another sort of cool but like kind of strong, scary type. But obviously, this is a show that's very tropey and has elements of parody. So each of these characters has a very sort of limited standard persona that's actually layered with deeper, surprising personality types. So all of them kind of have elements of the opposite of what they present, which is really interesting. But yeah, overall, the show deals with issues of gender identity, romance, even some of class politics, while still being a relatively light, comedic, romantic show.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess like one thing to add is that Haruhi gets pulled into the host club thinking that she was a dude. She was a guy.
Yes, the critical fact that I didn't mention.
No, I forgot about it until you. I heard you, and
it's
then
easy
I was
to
like,
forget.
Oh,
honestly, even though that is really the crucial plot point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, and I think that's. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about it in a second, but I do want to go over a few terms very quickly because I think that'll help people's understanding of what we're talking about. And we can just start with the term host club. It's in the title. And in the show, a host club is, this is in a very prestigious high school where the filthy rich, how did Tamaki describe it? It's like,
It's very rich boys with too much time on their hands entertain young ladies with too much time on their hands.
Exactly.
It's so good.
It's perfect. And the term was originated, our host clubs originated in the 1600s as a form of nightlife entertainment. Do you maybe want to add on to what else?
I mean, the limited information that I know is that it started in that way, kind of like bathhouses and inns. There's also like geisha culture and other kind of like red light entertainment, but it's sort of evolved. And in the modern day, we now have what's called hostess clubs. Usually there's hostess clubs versus host clubs, but both do exist. So a hostess club is basically where men will pay to be entertained in a non-sexual way by women who are hostesses. There's a lot of like drinking culture and there's a lot of conversation and flirtation, but it's just kind of a way for men to like relax and enjoy themselves and sort of receive female attention in a way that is non-sexual. And then the reverse, of course, is a host club where it's women paying to be entertained by male hosts. But yeah, so I think it's a little bit unique to Japanese culture. It's not something that we have kind of in the US. I think a lot of people may assume that it's like a strip club or like sex work, but that's not at all what it is. I think that's, so I guess like the version in this is kind of like a joke because when they say host club, it's like a school club, not like a real club. So that's kind of part of the, again, additional parody in this.
Right. And then another term is, two terms actually, is shoujo and shonen, which are like marketing genres of many different categories of anime and manga. And we'll start with shonen. Shonen is, I believe, the category is for like young boys. So like generally they will have a strong male lead and it's more adventure based from my understanding. And that could be like Naruto, that could be My Hero Academia, and those kinds of series. And then shoujo is the other side of that or similar, and that's like marketed towards young girls and girls and young women, and generally have more themes of romance and more, they can still be fantasy, but it's generally not,
I would say it's more character driven.
Character driven.
I would say personally, I think shoujo is a little bit more expansive than shonen. Like most shonen I've seen are very standard, like adventure, some violence, but like typically that's about it. Fantasy elements. Most shoujo that I've seen is like, I've seen like fantasy shoujos, for example. I've seen shoujos that are very romance heavy. I've seen shoujos that are very slice of life. There's a lot that are like beyond high school level realm as well. So I think what we're starting to see is the markets are starting to converge and blur a little bit, but still we do have a lot of very rigid gender norms, obviously, that are expressed with these two subsets.
Yeah. So that's like Sailor Moon, Cardcaptor Sakura, Fruits Basket, and then also Auron High School Host Club as well. And again, there are very many genres. There aren't just two genres within the whole manga and anime realm.
Right. It's kind of like more like market target audiences rather than genres. So like each of those markets has their own subgenres that can be categorized in there as well.
Okay, the term harem is also used in the show, right? Which it comes up quite a bit in anime and manga, which is funny because it was quite a popular setup in the 90s, but I would argue that it extends to today as well. Generally, a harem is like one male character with a bunch of supporting female characters, and then probably one or maybe even two love interests because the love triangle is such a popular trope as well. And then the reverse harem is one female character with a bunch of male characters.
Yeah, I just to sort of tie these sort of different tropes and genres together is that the reason why these terms are important is that Ouran High School Host Club both uses and sort of parodies or flips many of these classic structures. So as I said before, like we talked about hostess clubs, this is a host club, and in this case, like a school host club. This is also technically a shoujo because the main character is a woman, but she also kind of identifies as androgynous. She dresses as a man out of convenience, is somewhat queer coded, but still we are reminded that she is a woman oftentimes by the characters. So it still qualifies as a shoujo because the target audience is young women and girls. And then lastly, as we mentioned, it's a reverse harem. So typically it's a man with a bunch of women because I guess that's kind of like a male fantasy. We don't usually have as many reverse harems. I actually can't think of any. I'm sure there are, but this is definitely the most popular one. And then just two last terms I'll mention are yaoi and yuri. So yaoi is boys' love and yuri, I think, is girls' love, I'm assuming. And so that's kind of a term for like homoerotic narrative presence. And I will definitely say the show does flirt a lot with both of those, especially yaoi sort of tropes. So I really think it's important to talk about these terms because this show is really like the epicenter of all of it. It's like the perfect case study to really like explore all of these tropes and you know, types that you see in fiction. Yeah, I think it's always fun to look for those.
Awesome. So let's move on to, I mean, we touched a little bit on it, but let's move on a little bit to the legacy and the resurgence of the show, because I know as millennials, this, when it hit in the early 2000s, it was quite big. Like I didn't even watch the show at the time that it came out, but Everyone had like keychains. They were singing the song that's so iconic, the theme song. They were like striking the poses. I just talked to a friend who was telling me about her friend who would strike those poses in the middle of the city. Like it was such a phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say I think I joined Tumblr around, I don't even know, 2010, I'm guessing. And my gosh, I think this was the top show that was referenced. So many GIFs, so much shipping, fan theories, just people were obsessed with this show. There was something about the content, the timing of its release, and like the way that I think young girls especially, but also younger boys, were sort of feeling at the time, and like the experiences that they were having / we were having, that just made this show so relevant. It's really transcended time and still has a very large place in a lot of people's hearts.
Yeah, this was like, I knew this from people I talked to, but then also seeing it on in my research about also how pivotal this show was in people's like queer journeys.
Absolutely.
Of like understanding themselves.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome too. And the reason why I ended up watching the show really was in this like second wave, which happened around last year when Netflix took
the rights.
Yeah, Netflix got the distribution rights for the show. And so then it started trending on TikTok.
Yes, and that's what got within, me to watch it too for the first time.
Yeah, within the Gen Z generation and of course the millennials who missed out like we did. Mm-hmm. So why do you think it stayed so relevant over the years?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons. One, you mentioned like the trans and queer community. It has a very large place in their hearts. I mean, this is something that like multiple people have told me, like this was the show that helped them like process or realize that they were gay or identified as queer in some way. I think a lot of people who identify as queer are able to relate to different characters in the show. As I mentioned, there's a lot of characters who kind of like flirt with the concept of yaoi or boys love. There's a lot of characters that you can ship together that are of the same sex. Like there's enough material there for you to like be able to ship that. Obviously Haruhi also does not really, or she presents herself as male, and then her father also dresses as a woman for the most part, and I think identifies in various ways or is like called various terms that are technically like trans oriented or queer oriented. So there's just a lot of characters, which was very new at the time. I think it was very ahead of its time in that way, which is not to say that there aren't elements that haven't aged well, which is, that's definitely an issue.
Yeah.
But I think also one thing that's really important is that this was at a really critical time when I think things were just starting to get a little bit more progressive. Like, I remember it was around the time that I even first learned that like being gay was a thing, and there was starting to be more conversations about gay marriage, at least in America. But also I think in Japan, like Japan has a lot of like societal issues with very rigid sexual and gender rules. I think this show really appeals to people who are, you know, like teenagers or younger people who are sort of starting to realize like exactly how strict society can be, and that there are ways to sort of transgress that. And it's much easier to process or identify with that through fictional characters like this. But I think currently it's a very safe, kind of fun, light show for people to like escape, you know, a little bit from the trials of capitalism in daily life.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think the fact that it's packaged in this very lighthearted way and is also a cartoon kind of like goes with, this is like a great show for the two of us to talk about, because it does help package these larger, bigger issues. And just because it's marketed towards a younger audience doesn't mean there isn't a lot of nuance in what they're talking about.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so this show, like we said, was categorized as a romantic comedy. So, well, okay, let's start with the ways in that it is a typical romantic comedy. And then we can move on to the ways in which it's different.
The ways that it's typically a romantic comedy is there's a lot of like classic funny miscommunications, and there's a journey to realizing that love is happening that takes place over a lot of different like mishaps and different things that sort of set the main two lovers astray, but like eventually down the path where they need to go. So like the classic thing is that for whatever reason Tamaki is like convinced that his love for Haruhi is fatherly in nature, which obviously makes no sense.
No.
And it's like everybody is clued to the fact that he clearly has romantic feelings for her except him, and it's like a journey of him sort of realizing what love is, or that the love he has is not necessarily fatherly in nature. And this is more evident, by the way, in the manga, which I did read after finishing the anime. The anime does not necessarily resolve that romance very clearly. But the other main important thing is that it is a heterosexual romance, and that's definitely the version of the character's sexual orientation and gender that is rewarded and emphasized by the end of the story. It's very clear and often very irritating in the way that Tamaki consistently reminds Haruhi that she is a girl and sort of pushes her to be like a girl instead of just embracing the fact that she may just want to not identify as either gender or may prefer to identify as a boy. And you'll see kind of like, and this is again more clear in the manga, but also in the anime, is that she does sort of like lean more female appearing throughout the show, and that's definitely something the show rewards. So that's something that again is pretty typical of women led or, you know, like most romantic comedies are heterosexual. So
right yeah. And I guess in the ways that it's different, I would say that anime has a lot of queer coding that goes on generally, but I'll say that the ways that we think about gender and sexuality is the Western lens, I feel, in a lot of ways is more restrictive. It's complicated because there are certain ways in which the Western understanding seems to hold on really tightly to a strict mm-hmm. binary that is quite, it's not like it doesn't exist in the East, but because of our cultural history, it's the fact that there is a gender binary is much newer in the history, I feel.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of gender binaries in the East were actually like colonial products. Like mm-hmm. this is actually a big deal in South Asian culture. Like South Asia typically had like a very strong transgender community, which became just very like ostracized after various colonizations. So yeah, I think I see what you're saying in that a lot of times gender binary is a Western export. But also another element to it is that I think a lot of maybe non-Western media, there's a lot more clever usage of implicit coding, as you mentioned, in that way. And a lot of it may come down to what's more societally acceptable.
Yeah, it isn't the easiest thing to talk about in a summary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of why it might be categorized in one way or another. But anyway, know that there's some interesting ways in which the show plays with queer coding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big element that makes it so relatable and different in terms of how love is defined. And also there's a lot of character growth and self-love in a lot of, and we get to really spend time with each of the characters for the most part. There's
And that's what I really love about this show.
Yeah, and I think that's why the whole reverse harem is that, like, there's like a pretty clear bantering and love triangle that goes on, but it isn't the most central part of the show itself. And it allows us to then be able to focus on a bunch of other characters, because we're like, we know what's going on this side for the most part, and we'll get to it, but we can spend time with everyone else.
Yeah, I so agree. And that's why I was saying earlier, I don't actually think romance, even though we're choosing to discuss this because of Valentine's Day coming up, I actually don't think romance and love in the traditional romantic sense is actually the main focus of the show. It's much more about the character development of all of these different characters in the host club and how Haruhi, it sort of aids in that process as someone who's a fresh new addition to the group and is able to see them clearly for who they are, help them realize or find some sort of self-acceptance or self-love. I think also the way that she's able to sort of refresh their lives and the way they see the world through her different class background is really nice to see. But it's also just nice to dive into the world of high school and how much change is happening and how confusing and weird and wacky it is as an experience for people. But looking at that through the lens of the world's richest kids, and like, they're also just kids too. You know, they're experiencing very kid things at the same time as they're experiencing like rich kid class issues and, you know, high expectations, which I thought was really fun.
Right. And I think to that point, it's like, because these are about like kid, these are high school age kids, even though there's like that through line of the romance between certain characters, I think there's so much more about the self-love element that is more obvious. And that's a really big thing that sets it apart as a romantic comedy. And why it's more interesting to someone like me, because it's really every character had to find a reason to join or to stay in the club that involved them doing things for what was best for them and what they wanted to do. And through that, they were able to grow together and in their own ways, separate from these like ideas of what they held onto of what their life should have been like. I think Haruhi is a great example, because she came in sure that she was going to be, I think, like a lawyer or something, which is what her mom was. And her mother had passed away while she was very young. And Haruhi was really focused to get working, and she got in on a scholarship, unlike every other student in that school who could pay their way in. And yeah, I think part of why she was mistaken for a guy is just she was dressed so dishevelly and she couldn't afford the uniform, and gum was in her hair the day before, so she just cut it all off, and and she just didn't put that much effort in making herself happy because she was so focused on providing for her father and supporting her father and taking care of herself and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's great because it like every character has a very clear purpose and reason in terms of like what they need to grow or how they need to improve. Like, we know that Haruhi, she came to the school expecting just to study and is able to learn how to experience joy and relax and also be able to rely on others because of these boys. And in the same way, she kind of in turn helps the other boys sort of achieve that self-love they're looking for, which I think is a really nice usage of the harem trope. Like, I think traditionally, and again, I don't have that much experience with this, so take this with a grain of salt, but I think traditionally harem enemies, it's usually a boy with a bunch of girls, and like the purpose is not character driven. It's mainly just for romance and like sexuality, for, you know, this fantasy of a boy being able to choose between all these really hot women.
It's basically like giant breasts.
This is like Bachelor versus Bachelorette, which is like, I think, such a good example. So The Bachelor is a reality TV show in which a guy has to choose from like whatever 20 plus women, and he gets engaged to one at the end. And I think it's like, it's a very big fantasy for a lot of men to be able to like have that option. And I just feel like the culture of that show is a lot worse and more toxic than the culture of The Bachelorette, where it's a woman choosing between a bunch of men, because that feels a little bit more empowering to me to endow women with choice and allow them to choose what's healthy and right for them. Because historically, women haven't been given as much choice, whereas the previous version, you know, a man choosing which of women doesn't feel as empowering, because that feels like the standard, like, historical advantage given to men. So that's why I do really like that about this show, is that it's using the sort of harem trope in a way that's like useful and important and like helps develop the characters for a purpose, rather than just as like silly eye candy, though it may look like that, like, on the surface.
Yeah, I think it plays with those ideas a lot, and it's really about establishing Haruhi's like chosen family. She still has her father, but like this club has becomes her family, and it just happens to be all guys. So maybe we can transition to like the queer elements of this, because you can tell by now this is an important part of the show. And I've never seen a show, whether it's Eastern or Western, that so casually and succinctly what episode was it? Like episode 5 or something, where the main character, especially a female character, just summarizes the way that she represents herself. So Haruhi generally, even though she ends up hiding her identity as a guy, it's really less about her. Like, she doesn't really give a fuck, right? A quote from the show is Haruhi saying, like, in my opinion, it's more important for a person to be recognized for who they are rather than for what sex they are.
Yeah, and so great, so ahead of its time.
Yeah, exactly. And it definitely kind of, I could really relate to that idea. And even though I didn't present, I presented female growing up, but like, did I think about gender? Like, do children really think about gender in the way that adults do?
This is the age, like, when we start to, which is why the timing is so good.
Exactly. And try to grapple with it. And so it's something that shouldn't be that big a deal, and yet it definitely is.
Yes, you know, it's so key. Just a simple line like that. I mean, you're right. I've never seen any show with this like target audience at that time say something like that. That is so profound and so succinct and so important in like such a silly sort of context.
Yeah. And what I also further like is that we get context as to why Haruhi has such like a blasé, maybe isn't the term, but just like a relaxed attitude about how she presents herself. And that has a lot to do, we learn about Haruhi's dad, who Ryoji Fujioka, who is a professional crossdresser and then also crossdresses during the day, it seems like. Not so, we get to see flashbacks where he isn't like that, but I think it's really cool that we even get to see snippets of his life, and also how his wife felt about it, because she seemed very supportive.
Yeah, I love that too.
His career, which was also really awesome. I will mention that there is, in the dub, there is a slur that is used, like the T slur. And you know, it's not like it's bleeped out in the dub. You can go
Did not age well. I don't think it didn't age a slur in the sub, but obviously I don't know like in Japanese if they did.
I think they do have it in, actually, you know what, yeah, I completely forgot about that, but I do know that the original term that they use is okama, which doesn't necessarily refer to...
I think it's like a general queer word.
It's a general queer term and often is associated with men who cross-dress as women, but I don't believe it's necessarily that. But the choice in the dub to use the T word is definitely, I think, interesting to see, because I remember how casually that word was used, because we didn't have a... I don't know, I was younger, so like just as a society, it didn't seem like we really knew how much power we were giving that word in relation to honoring people's choice and of self is presentation versus like what their actual gender identity was, and that there are different things like that. Like we're moving along as a culture and a society in a pretty fast pace, honestly. Like it didn't take that long, and I think that's
it does show. It shows how much we've evolved since then. Obviously, there's still a lot of work to do, but I think it's really great because it's probably in part due to shows like these that gets like people talking online and gets the culture evolving to adopt more progressive language and consider more progressive contexts, even within the realm of fiction. So, you know, even if parts of this show didn't age well, which definitely there are parts that didn't, it's still worth analyzing the roots of how like progress sort of takes place. It starts from somewhere, and there's always new media sort of pushing the boundaries. And I think this definitely counts as one of them. I think on the point of gender, there's also, I really wanted to talk about, I think it's episode 5. It's the beach episode, which is one of the most controversial episodes in the show. So for context, they go to the beach and there's these men that are harassing some of the high school girls, and Haruhi goes to sort of defend them, and she ends up getting pushed into the sea, and Tamaki dives in to save her. And then yells at her for basically saying, like, you should know, like, your place as a girl, like, you need people to help you, like, you shouldn't, you know, try to fight or stand up like that because it's dangerous. And we understand that Tamaki is just worried for her, but it came off as very, like, you know, reminding her that she's a girl, telling her what a girl should do, the limitations of a girl, and again, forcing this narrative that she is a girl, even though she doesn't really identify that much with it. But even worse, later on, there's a scene in which Kyoya sort of like pretends to like rape her or like get on top of her. It's very uncomfortable and did not age well at all. And then the narrative
as a way to teach, as a way to teach her a lesson.
As a way to teach her, which is so messed up. And then Haruhi just like goes along with it and is like, oh yeah, I understand why you were doing that. And it was so messed up, really bad taste. But yes, that's just one example I want to bring up, which is like, the show is imperfect. It definitely has a lot of really good stuff, you know, that helped a lot of the queer community explore their gender, sexual orientation, but also just have characters to project onto or love and enjoy. But there's also just elements of it that were like, yeah, this makes sense that it was, you know, in 2006 and a product of maybe a time or culture or place that was not very progressive. And I know that Japan has a really bad culture when it comes to consent and lack of consent. And it's not on the same level as we are out here on the West, which is not to say, you know, perfect either. But yeah, I just thought it was important to mention that because it is quite controversial, that whole episode.
Yeah, there are some YouTube videos that I was watching about the show and that I think could help. One of the videos is called the Auron High School Host Club Review by Anime America. And then the other one is What Happened to Auron High School Host Club by Negative Legend. You guys can check that out if you want. And there's two different perspectives, and they both of them mentioned that episode. And one of them is understandably negative about the show, but then the other one is not necessarily positive, but kind of like goes towards like the larger message, since we obviously can't change the show, and just kind of reminds us at least like why they may have thought it was a good idea to begin with, whether or not it actually was. I do think the Kyoya part of that episode is really terrible, and I would, yeah, I can't even imagine someone doing that to me, especially to teach me a lesson. Like, that is horrible. So fucked up.
Yeah.
But in terms of Tamaki like yelling at Haruhi and like being kind of like mad at her, especially in the beginning, I will say that I understand that, because point isn't that as a girl she can't take on these guys. It's that she was on the same level as everyone else and kind of saw what was happening like in the beach below and decided to go help them all by herself when she had all her friends there.
Either. Right. I think they could have like concluded that tension in a more smooth way that maybe celebrates Haruhi's intention, but also pushes the message that they were trying to push, which is that she can rely on others and not doing everything on her own. And right. There was no, I mean, I understand why they were doing it, of course, but looking back now, there was no reason why they needed to like gender the whole experience. Yeah. Like, it could have just been like, you can rely on us, period. Not like, you can rely on us because you're a woman.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point.
Yeah.
I think that would have made it a stronger episode for sure. And then also wouldn't, I don't know, it definitely makes it seem like Haruhi was completely wrong, which I don't think she was either.
Right. And it also goes along with the whole thing of them like consistently reminding her what her biological sex is, despite her consistently reminding them, hey, I'm dressed as a man, / I don't care if I'm perceived as a man. So that's just like a frustration that I think people in the community have noticed. But of course, it's true. Both are true. You can love this show for all that it does and criticize the areas where it fails.
I think that's like anything. If
exactly.
The people who are the most involved with a topic tend to have a lot of criticisms, but it's only because they know the potential of how it could
and
be
better.
And
that's why nuance is so important.
Nuance, it's our word of the day.
Without it, we wouldn't be here talking about anything.
I feel like something we maybe haven't talked too much about is like the class structure in the show, because it the queer elements are really important, but also I think the differences in class really inform how the narrative takes place and why Haruhi is even more at odds, other than the fact that she was dressing up as a boy for whatever reason, right? Haruhi is the only one who couldn't, other than if she didn't have the scholarship, she wouldn't be able to pay her way into the school. And everyone's experience of what is normal and what kind of food is normal and what kind of like treatment is normal, it all has to do with class. And also her self-reliance is a survival tool that is, I think, made more obvious when she is in the high school setting, because it puts her at odds because she does have to do everything by herself.
And it's great because it's kind of the quality that she's able to nurture in the other characters as well. Like, there's a healthy give and take relationship between her and the other characters in which they're both helping each other develop, which is what ideally you'd want in any sort of relationship. Whereas in, I think, a lot of other narratives, a lot of times it's very simplified and like the woman is like bringing the emotion and sensitivity and free therapy to the man, but the man isn't providing much back, which is obviously unhealthy. So I really did like that about this show. And yeah, just in general about class, like I really loved that this was a show kind of a little bit about class divide, but not really in a division sense, and more in a like, how does like a class divide bring a refreshing understanding and unity to characters on different sides? And I think we can compare, like we talked a lot about this with our Kane episode. And that show is like, everything is such a like harsh dichotomy. You literally have an upper city and a lower city. And it's like, you got grimy, like grungy, punky people below, and you've got like elegant people above. Like it's so rigid. But with this show, it's like these rich kids find like a taste and love for instant coffee. And they are able and more interested in exploring parts of Japan with Haruhi rather than traveling internationally, because Haruhi doesn't have a passport. Haruhi has like a really adorable dream to taste fancy tuna instead of something wild, more expensive or exciting. Like that's something that she really cherishes. So it's just a really nice way in which the characters go through those different worlds, especially the way that Tamaki just finds the experience of normal life and like Haruhi's like, I guess, just normal level of class interesting and exciting. They genuinely want to learn and be a part of that world in a way that's really refreshing. And I think it's just a nice way of framing class that is, you know, not so dark and divisive.
Yeah, divisive. I think it in a lot of ways accepts that there are cultural differences,
right?
But not differences in, well, but if there's an openness, then it kind of helps everyone else learn and grow. And I really love that instant coffee example, because
it's a great metaphor.
So like Haruhi is asked to buy coffee for the rest of the patrons. And so she runs and buys coffee, and she just gets instant coffee because that's like what she drinks. And everyone's just like, what is this? You don't grind your own beans. You just put water. Like, oh my gosh. The commoners, because they always call them commoners, right? So like the commoners don't have enough time to grind their beans, so then they need something really fast. And it's just like a really funny exchange. But in the end, everyone tries it, the instant coffee, and they like it. And then it ends up being served at the host club.
Yeah, like repeatedly. Like it becomes like their signature drink, and everyone in the school is obsessed. And it's just so funny.
Yeah, it's like sometimes we don't know what we don't know, which is why it's really good to have like to be open to change and things that are different, you know, just to like push ourselves a little bit in that way. And then there is the potential to like really like something new, and to also like have that bring everyone closer together. I think the exploring Japan part is also really cool, because having come from a very privileged high school myself, it was a very big thing to travel abroad and to do like a bunch of different trips with the school. Although I will say that because we were in Hong Kong, it's a much smaller place than the US, if that makes sense. Like it's not as, we don't have to travel that far to go international. But anyway, there were certain trips that were done here in Hong Kong, and it was always considered like the less cool trips, even though it was so much cheaper. And my sister did Hong Kong trip. I did a few Hong Kong trips, and they were always really great. And it was really cool to see a different part of this
Yeah.
city that I had never seen before. And I know I like talked to my friends who went on those trips, and we really loved those trips. Passports really are, I think, another tool for class divide that is very tangible because it really defines people's options for where they are and
Right.
what their world looks like and shapes like.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like Hong Kong is a very port city and has always been a port city, and so many of the population doesn't have a passport. I've talked to a lot of people who don't have it because it's also expensive to have.
And you're
But
using it for things that are expensive too, because traveling is expensive.
exactly. But do they know Hong Kong in a way that's more in depth than someone like myself who travels a lot outside of Hong Kong? Like, yes, like that's a different level of understanding that I'm trying to
Right.
have now, but it's, like it's just different. It's really cool that I think an element like that was in this show.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good way of putting it, because this show does a very rare, amazing job of portraying class divide in a way that's not super stark or negative, which is so rare. I mean, I think any show I've ever seen about class divide is very much like the haves and the have-nots, or like grass is always green on the
Yeah,
other side, or
being
like,
poor sucks,
yeah, or
like,
romanticizing being poor, or like making
yeah,
being
or
rich
that.
seem terrible. Like every single, there's always something terrible or wrong. And this just does a nice way of explaining, like, so there's some good things and refreshing ways to explore class and to, experience the other side in a way that's not horrible.
Am I wrong, but is this another piece that's like more typical with shoujo than shonen?
I don't know. It's definitely worth exploring. I definitely think that shoujo slash female driven narratives maybe embrace healing and relationship building and character development in a healthier manner, sometimes, not always, than shonen characters. I think shonen shows are more about strife and beating yourself past like an issue. I think the way of resolving conflict is very different. But to
It's
be
like
clear,
punching it with your fists.
shoujo does have a lot of very toxic tropes as well. But I just think they're just like toxic in different ways, like with, maybe male-driven shows being a little bit more about resolving conflict through violence or through like a very specific individualistic narrative than
Yeah.
shoujo might be.
And that actually reminds me of another video that I was watching that I think is maybe one of my favorites that I've watched doing the research for this. And this is not specifically about the show, it is actually about shoujo and shonen anime, and it's called Shoujo Romance Anime is Disappearing. This Might Be Why by the Anime T. I really love all their videos. I like was sucked into a hole. They're great. But just looking at shoujo and shonen as genres and kind of like thinking about why we haven't had a really great shoujo romance anime that has like caught the attention of a lot of people. And they do make the differentiation between shoujo that comes from manga versus shoujo that comes directly to animation production because there is a difference and one is winning out over the other. And also it just yeah it also makes some comparisons between shoujo and shonen in terms of like the marketing power and how much resources and time is going to one over the other. I think
So
that's a
do they have
really.
a conclusion as to why shoujo hasn't captured audiences much lately? Because I feel that too. I don't know why, but like all the best shoujo I've ever watched, most of my favorite anime too comes from, I would say, like the late 90s and like the first decade of the 2000s, and maybe a little bit last decade. But just a lot of the stuff I've seen recently does feel very gimmicky. There's a lot of copy paste sort of artistic styles. That might be part of it, is like the lack of unique artistic styles. I've just seen a lot of new anime, it's like the same type of face in every character. Definitely a lot of fan service, but in a way that's kind of like gross. I don't know. Like, it's kind of just a sense that I've gotten. I feel like others have observed too, but I don't know what the societal context is.
Yeah, like there's no, is it like Sailor Moon or
Yeah, those were the best
our own high
times.
school host club? Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for me to speak on it because I don't really watch this to begin with, but the anime T was saying how nowadays there is this. Even though, like, historically, shoujo has made a lot of money, it's not like shonen was necessarily outperforming shoujo all the time. But now there's a lot more shows that are not based on the manga that, because of their because of the licensing and the access that they have to platforms like Netflix and other streaming services, those are generally what people are watching instead. And the thing is, like, those stories, I do think there's like a there's a lot that can be gained from developing a manga into an anime that was kind of lost, so it's also just different. And I think it's cheaper ultimately, which is why it's being
Yeah,
preferred.
I see. Cheaper, but then also the quality might be cheaper. At least
Yeah,
that's what I've noticed.
exactly.
I definitely think
But
ones that are adapted by manga have more unique styles and have better stories than the ones that aren't.
Do you have examples of shoujo now that you know of? Because I'm not that familiar, to be completely honest.
Yeah, there hasn't been that much recently. I guess Fruits Basket, they made a remake. But it is an older one. But I watched the remake, which came out recently, and I think that was pretty successful. But yeah, that's why I just there's nothing that's really caught my attention that's more new. And I just feel like there's a bit of a scarcity, or maybe it's an access thing, like you said, like those shows or content are just not making their way to the services that I have out here. But yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of shoujo romance, but I did like the shoujo genre. Like, I loved Cardcaptor Sakura a lot, and I think I've like watched the entire series now that they've put it on
I need to watch
Netflix. You
it.
know? Yeah, it's just cute and light, and personally I feel like that's something that we could use nowadays, like those kinds of shows that just it's like they're not saying that terrible things don't happen. They're saying that we can get through them, and they generally tend to be more community based, or like everyone working together versus having one very strong lead that can like punch their way through whatever problem with a strong enough fist. But anyway, so in terms of us viewing it from this like modern lens, do you feel like the show is feminist? Where does it we just like very briefly, because we've mentioned it already, is like where does it shine? Where is it maybe regressive, fall short? How do you feel?
Yeah, so I think feminist is kind of like loaded. I wouldn't say it's necessarily like about the advancement of women, but I think it does promote Haruhi's freedom, her choice, and it does celebrate like her own agency, which is great. Are there faults to it, the way that they kind of characterize her gender and sometimes limit her character? Yes. Is it somewhat limiting in the way that it portrays relationships by, like, you know, very implicitly suggesting homosexual relationships, but only explicitly confirming heterosexual relationships? Yes. But I think it does have a lot of progress, or provide a lot of progress that was unprecedented at the time. And I think the community still celebrates it despite its faults. And I overall really enjoy it. I think it's a really fun light show that is much needed, even to the present day. And I think it's helped a lot of people personally with their like journey towards understanding their sexuality. Yeah. So I would
Yeah.
say, yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. I really like it as well. I honestly more than I expected to like it. And I think as long as we can view it in the lens of like this is a show of its time, and so that way we can kind of distance ourselves from some of the more problematic elements of the show that they definitely probably wouldn't have gotten away with if they had done it today. But I like shows like that because one, it shows us how far we've come, but two, it also helps with the conversation. Like, I think nowadays there's a lot of limitations to what is in the media only because everyone's so afraid of pissing off someone out there. It's because we can all hear each other now. Before, we couldn't hear each other in the same way. So now, like, certain shows or movies or is it's some ways that they can be quite limited. But I have no problems with the problematic stuff given where we are today,
Yeah,
if that
agreed.
makes sense.
Nice.
Okay, so Sonia, what do you think makes the show revolutionary?
Yes, I mean, so many things. There's no show quite like this, honestly. Like, it is so revolutionary in so many ways. But I guess there's maybe two things that sort of stand out a little bit more. One
Yeah,
is
leave me
that,
some to
yeah.
say.
Yeah, I'll just say one is that I think it's one of the best examples of a show utilizing the female gaze. Like, usually we have a male gaze, you know, perspective, and it's like a lot of hypersexualization, like just a lot of gross fan service. But this was a nice way in which I did really feel like it was for women and girls, celebrates men, but not in a way that's super traditionally masculine at all. It celebrates their beauty, the many different types of men they are, even if they are tropey. It's still just nice to have like a view from our perspective that is not super steeped in patriarchy. And then just the second thing I'll say is that I think the way that it embraces the journey of discovering self-love and prioritizes that journey over necessarily like classic heterosexual romance, which is definitely present, but it's not, I think, the main driving core of the series, which I think is really crucial. I think we're fed this idea that women only love like romance narratives, which is like not true. Rather, I think it's nice that it focuses on just character development as a whole and the way that romance is just like one piece of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess for me, I think what makes the show revolutionary is how it's like you can have these discussions about queerness and gender identity, but for, you know, the person who might not identify as queer, like we also are limited by this idea of how we're supposed to be presenting our gender, and that ultimately that is a social construct that doesn't really matter, you know, like it matters in terms of larger issues of like how we treat each other, unfortunately. But if we were able to embrace that, we would see that it's really not that big a deal. Like, and yeah. I think the other part of that is really the importance of, like, in extension to what you're saying about self-love, is also an acceptance of a community and a family. That, again, the great thing about the activists within the queer community is advocating for the right to having a chosen family, but that isn't a purely queer concept. Like, we can all benefit from that as well. And you don't have to have a terrible relationship with your family in order to set
have
up
a found family, right? That's such
a good
exactly
point. Right. You can have both, and you don't have to do things by yourself. And that is also the part of the journey of self-love. So, yeah, sit with that one, audience.
We've definitely threw a lot at you today. We've changed.
this has been a fun episode. Do you have any
so good
hot takes, Easter eggs?
I have a cool fact, I guess. I guess it's kind of Easter egg, but so I learned that through my research as well, that apparently there is like a DS game and maybe a PS2 game that was made based on Ouran High School Host Club. And it's like a classic dating sim. I never played it. I don't know anyone who's played it. It's like, I've never even heard of this. So I think it's so hilarious that they had this. This is back in the era where every franchise had a DS game that was like awful. But apparently it's like a dating sim where like Haruhi enters the club and she kind of, you know, converses and goes through various scenarios with each of the club members. Oh. And she actually gets to choose who she ends up with based on how the dating or conversations go, which I thought was pretty interesting because she doesn't have to end up with Tamaki. And yeah, and I guess it's like a dream for all the shippers, you know, of which there are many for this show, like to be able to have Haruhi choose whichever, although I guess you can't ship the other characters together. But yeah, I just thought that was hilarious. That's like an actual artifact of this world.
I heard about that as well, and I thought that was interesting. Someone who still owns their Nintendo DS.
Oh, me too.
So if anyone finds it, no, I can't guarantee I'll play it. Anyway,
what about you?
Let's see. So mine is it's just like a little factoid that because I had been watching the dub, I found out that Caitlin Glass, who is the voice of Haruhi Fujioka, also I think was a director for the entire dub and also sang the theme song. So she was like involved in every part of
that
this.
Is so
like
she's, cool. Passion
she sang
project.
The English, you know, the English theme song, obviously. So she kind of had her hands in everything, which
is awesome.
Interesting. Yeah.
Go her,
exactly.
Very cool.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. Otherwise, this episode's going to be way too long.
Yeah, and honestly, this is just us dipping our toes into... This is our first anime series, I believe, we're discussing. This is just us dipping our toes. Like, I'm sure in future episodes, we'll go really deep into shoujo or something else. So, yeah. If you enjoyed it, let us know and we'll be sure to make more content like this. But I'm sure you have lots of hot takes and theories about the show because there's no end to what we have seen and discussed. So please do comment on our Instagram posts, our Twitter posts. I believe you can send questions through Spotify as well or Anchor or email us at contact.cartoonrevolution.
Yes, that's correct. @gmail.com.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us on Cartoon Revolution. Episodes drop the first week of every month on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other major podcast platforms.
Follow us on Instagram at cartoonrevolution.pod. That's cartoonrevolution.pod.
Tell us what you're watching and share your hot takes with us. Music is from The Musical Ghost. See you next time.
See you soon. Mwah.